Welcome to the IBCLC Mentor Podcast, where real-world lactation cases and theoretical scenarios come to life. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and a dedicated IBCLC with passion for guiding the next generation of lactation consultants. Whether you're a student or new to the field, this podcast is designed to equip you with the knowledge and confidence you need to excel in your practice. Welcome to the IBCLC Mentor Podcast. I'm Margaret Salty, your host, and I am so excited today to be talking with Allison Tolman, a pumping expert and creator of New Little Life. Allison is passionate about empowering families with the knowledge and skills they need for a confident pumping journey. Through her online courses, podcasts, and YouTube channel, she has reached thousands of parents and professionals, making lactation education accessible and approachable. I'm so excited for you to hear what she has to say, so let's jump in. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode to get the coupon code to purchase Allison's course. Hey there, future IBCLCs. Are you ready to conquer the IBCLC exam with confidence? If so, I've got something amazing for you. The IBCLC Exam Mastery Course, opening January 1st. This course is designed just for you, aspiring lactation consultants ready to take their passion and turn it into certification success. With engaging modules, practice questions, and comprehensive study guides, you'll gain the knowledge, strategies, and confidence you need to ace the IBCLC exam. And here's the best part. I am so confident in this course that I guarantee your success or your money back. That's right. There's zero risk, only results. Doors open January 1st and space is limited. So mark your calendars and get ready to invest in your future as an IBCLC. Visit margaretsalty.com/courses today to take the first step toward your certification. The IBCLC Exam Mastery Course, because your success starts right here. Let's make 2025 the year you become an IBCLC. See you in the course. Hi, Allison. Welcome. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I'm so excited to dig into this conversation with you. You are the only pump expert I've had on my podcast so far. And I know that all of my students and followers are going to be really excited to hear what you have to say. I think a lot of my students know a lot about lactation, but there's only so much that we can cover in our program about pumps because there's so many available. So I'm really excited to hear all the things that you have to offer to students and to parents and all of that. Let's jump in. The first thing that I really want to know, and I kind of ask all of my guests, is where are you located and tell me about the work you're doing?
Yeah, great question. So my husband's active duty military, so our location changes a lot. Currently, as the day we're recording this, we live in Utah, but we move frequently. So if you followed me on social media, you'll see lots of different locations. I'm not actually running a traditional IBCLC practice. I'm more functioning as a coach in a long-term coaching program. It's called Pumping for Working Moms. So we specifically focus on pumping education and support for mothers who are committed to breastfeeding, but will be going back to work, kind of finding that balance on how to make it work. It's all virtual, so it's not location-based or anything like that. And then we also have a YouTube channel as part of our business as well, kind of providing free education there. So everything that we're currently doing, me and my team, is all online and virtual.
Amazing. Utah's been on TV a little bit lately and it's beautiful. So I love that for you.
We love being close to the mountains. It's been really fun.
The mountains are amazing. And you know, some of my followers know this, you probably don't know this, but we're big hockey fans. So have you been to a hockey game yet?
I have not. We've only been here a few months, actually. We moved over the summer, so.
Well, hockey's only been in season for a few months, so you got to get there.
Okay, I'm going to put it on our list.
Yes, do it, do it. Okay, awesome. So, you know, we all come to the field of lactation through different passions and different routes. Tell me what brought you to the field of lactation.
I think it's really common for lactation professionals to come out of their own experience, but I actually came in as a nurse first. So I was an LPN. I got my first job back in 2009. The economy was terrible. I just happened to be able to land a job in OBGYN and found a real love for that space, and pretty quickly realized that there were a lot of breastfeeding moms coming in and the doctors didn't really know how to help them. And that was kind of odd to me. So I have never been a blood and guts kind of nurse. I've always loved more of the education and patient-centered part of nursing. So I went and took my CLC course and certification and started helping the physicians in our clinic see breastfeeding mothers and give them actual help and support. So that's kind of where it started. And then as soon as I had my first child, it was hard. I called lactation professionals. You know, I had a birth doula at the birth, and I actually went into birth work for a while. I was a birth doula, childbirth educator, kind of did that in the childbearing years. I did go back to work after my first son, though. I was a school nurse, and so I went back for the following school year and pumped at work, and it was hard. And I remember watching my milk supply kind of go down and down and down, and the daycare was like, we need to supplement with formula. And I'm just like, just don't tell me, because I'm doing everything I can. So just feed the baby, but I'm going to send what I have and do my best. And that was really frustrating. It actually played a factor in me not going back to work the following year and after subsequent babies, because I'm like, breastfeeding is really important to me and I don't think I can do that again. So we moved to Belgium. We were stationed over there for a couple years, and I had a hard time finding work there. Obviously, there's a language barrier and just some SOFA laws and things like that being in the military. So I met someone that started, she helped businesses start YouTube channels. So I started that there and did some lactation, some doula stuff, some breast pump stuff, and the breast pump stuff really took off. And I'm like, wow, people need information on this and I could do that. So I started doing more videos there. I hired an engineer and we came up with a device to test breast pumps. I just, as a nurse, I love data. And so I was looking for more objectionable data to be able to share with people. You know, you think about a mother who's never pumped before. How do you explain the difference between these pumps or what it feels like or what metrics are we even looking at? So that was kind of born there. And then about 3 years ago, when we moved back to the States, I launched my coaching program. Again, I didn't want to do one-on-one visits, just for my own personal life and managing the three kids in a home and things. So I hired a business coach and launched more of a coaching program. So, and really leaned into this breast pump world, because I realized I got my IBCLC when we lived in Europe, but we got zero education on breast pumps, zero. But there is no one else that's going to help breastfeeding mothers with this. You know, physicians, midwives, pediatricians, they don't even know anything about breastfeeding. So we are the only ones that are going to be able to help moms. But I realized we had no education. So started training other professionals and stuff too. And it's just kind of where we landed.
For those that don't know much about pumps, which most of us don't, what is it that we need to know? What are the basics that we need to know? And then I want you to tell me more about the kind of things that you offer to fill in those gaps.
I think the biggest thing is that pumping is a totally different skill set than feeding at the breast. And I think even just understanding that will help you find the motivation to learn more, right? Because it is not the same in almost no ways. Milk comes out, but that's kind of where the similarities disappear. So milk supplies are managed in a totally different way with a breast pump than they are with a baby. How the breast pump interacts with the breast tissue is totally different than the way a baby latches at the breast. The way that a milk expression session functions is totally different when you're using a cold, lifeless robot versus when you're using a baby who was kind of biologically designed to work with you in this process. So I think first understanding that these are totally different things will kind of help bridge the gap a little bit. I know that can be frustrating, especially for someone who may be new to lactation or still trying to get their bearings on the feeding at the breast side of this, to know that there's this whole other skill set that you also have to learn, because you're likely going to be faced with pumping questions and challenges from the mothers you serve.
I love that you said that, because so often we will encounter moms that come back and say, the pediatrician said the baby's not getting enough, so he wants me to pump to see how much I'm making. And I teach my students, but it's hard to reinforce this, that pumping is not a good indicator of how much milk a mom is making, because there's so many factors involved and it doesn't work like the baby. It's not the same.
Yeah, there's a few big things that are really not the same. I think the first one that comes to mind is obviously feeding on demand. You cannot pump on demand because the pump wants nothing, right? You are in control of that schedule. And so you have to decide what your schedule looks like. Another one is letdowns. When you're feeding at the breast, the baby initiates that first letdown. And I would say that first letdown is generally pretty easy on a breast pump too, but you're having multiple letdowns during a breastfeeding session. And if you don't initiate that with a pump, it may not happen. And I think one of the things that I say really often is, when you're in control, you're in control. It can be both a pro and a con in this scenario, because a lot of moms like the control. They like to see the ounces. They like to monitor what's coming out and what's going in, versus, you know, when you're feeding at the breast, it's a lot more intuitive and you kind of have to use other metrics that aren't as concrete. But there's also some big cons that come when you're in total control of your milk supply. And I think one of my favorite concepts to teach both mothers and especially new to pumping lactation professionals is, there is a big difference between low milk supply and low pumping output, which kind of goes along with what you just said, is that just because you're not getting a lot out with the pump does not mean you have low supply. I guess it can. If you have low supply, you're going to get low output, but it doesn't always mean that. And that's a big issue that we see a lot.
Yeah, that's amazing. So tell me about the programs that you have created and who the audience is for those programs.
Yeah, so I do quite a bit of speaking at conferences and things like that. I mean, breast pumps and pumping is a big topic in the lactation world, I think largely because it's really hard to find quality education on pumping, because there's, you know, the research is lacking. We've been doing decades of research on feeding at the breast, but not as many on pumping. And the research we do have is often from large pump companies who have the money to do that, which again is what it is. You know, I don't have $100,000 to do a study on all these pumps. So, yeah, but there's a little bias there, you know, so you just kind of have to take what we can find. So I think in finding a lot of data from, we tested over 100 breast pumps now with kind of my homemade device. Well, an engineer made it, not me. I'm not that smart to be able to do something like that, but it's really kind of opened my eyes of what metrics are we actually comparing on a breast pump? Which of these things actually matter? And why do some pumps work better for some mothers and not for others?
Tell me about that. I'm really interested in this. What metrics should we be looking at?
Yeah, I think the most common metric that we see compared is suction, right? And it's usually maximum suction. But I found when I was testing these pumps that a lot of them fell within a very similar range of maximum suction. Even, you know, the hospital use pumps, the big ones that we see there, had very similar maximum suctions to most of the personal use pumps on the market. So then I asked, well, what is different? Why do these pumps tend to work better and more efficiently than these other pumps when the maximum suction is really within a normal range? And not many moms are even pumping on these maximum levels. So that doesn't make a lot of sense. So obviously, you do need good suction to get milk out. That's part of the process. The cycle speeds are something that has been very interesting for me to kind of explore. And we tend to see a little bit faster cycle speeds, especially when you're initiating that initial letdown. And I see faster cycle speeds on, particularly on hospital use pumps, so those bigger ones, a little bit slower on personal use pumps, which is interesting. Some personal use pumps now are putting faster speeds on. So does that work better, worse? You know, there's also a lot of different patterns of suction. So you have just like your standard up and down. You have some that are vibrating. You have some that are constant suction, some that are alternating left and right, some that have just really weird patterns, longer pulls, shorter breaks. Like, there's a wide variety of combinations that are happening on each individual pump. and just so many more metrics than I even realized.
You created the tool to measure the pumps. What did you create out of what you've learned?
Yeah, so I think there's three, we created kind of three main courses, I guess you could say, training modules inside of pumping. And these were kind of the three that stood out as most impactful to me. So the first one is breast pump science. And that is really diving into the nerdy stuff of breast pumps. Like, how do we, if you are presented with a new pump, a mother brings this pump she's using, how do you figure out what it does, what its limitations are, and if it's a good fit for this mother, you know? So that's kind of the science of breast pumps, sometimes I'll call it. And then there's comprehensive flange sizing. And I know flange sizing is a really hot topic in this area, and it has been for a while, which I'm glad. I'm really glad that we're talking about it, that we're researching it as much as we can. And I think the thing I want to point out here is that flange sizing really is a clinical skill. And like all clinical skills, it is constantly evolving. So we have a way of teaching flange sizing that we've found works for us. Me and a colleague put this course together, and we've done this a lot, and it works. Is it the only way that it can be done? Probably not. Like, we're still learning and adjusting, but we've done this for thousands of mothers and it's worked really well. So that's kind of what we'll teach. And we really focus on, you know, like giving the why behind it so that you can kind of take that information and then put it into your practice and learn and evolve this as well. And then the last section of our training modules is called pumping in practice. And this is my favorite part because my brain tends to function really practically and logically. So this is where we talk about what skills do you need to help a mother with to be able to pump effectively? And I think it probably feels really similar to the training that we get on feeding at the breast, right? There's a lot of different things that can go wrong and a lot of different scenarios. So you kind of just have to do the basics on everything and then kind of use those skills to troubleshoot on your own. And so that section is one of my favorites. It goes through a lot, but really just helping with those practical skills.
Yeah, I love that. So the target audience for that is lactation consultants, student lactation consultants, people that would take this knowledge and put it into practice, not moms.
Correct. This training is called Pumping for Lactation Professionals. So literally what it is. Yeah. This is separate from the coaching program that I run with my team.
I want to talk a little bit more about that coaching program in a minute, but let's talk more about pumps right now. So when I became a lactation consultant many, many years ago, and when I was having my own babies, everybody was about a Medeal. That was the gold standard. When I started working at a hospital, I think it was around the time that Medeal started offering bottles with nipples in their kits. So a lot of lactation consultants were very anti-Medeal because they were no longer WHO code compliant. So they really were pushing Amitas. But now it seems like almost every parent I see has a Spectra. Most of them have the S1 or the S2. Occasionally they'll have the mini gold. So tell me, from what you are seeing with the coaching clients, what you have seen with your own independent testing, what do you think is the best bang for buck for a personal use pump for a mom?
Yeah, it's a good question. And when I go do speaking engagements, I usually take my opinion minion with me. So anytime someone asks me my opinion, I can grab him just to clearly delineate. So I am happy to share my opinion. Is that what you're looking for? Is like my personal opinion on some of these brands? Okay. So just to be clear, this is just me and not, you know, the golden standard. I think if I had to make like a top five list of breast pumps in 2025, Spectra would be very near the top. It is a high quality pump. So it's made with good parts. We're seeing it last a long time. It has good suction. It has good cycle speeds, and it has that vibration pattern that a lot of moms like. I will say, if you are prone to vasospasms or if you have some sensory issues already, that vibration, you may not love that. But I would say for most moms, it works really, really well. I've never talked to that company. I do talk to a lot of companies just to kind of learn and explore. I've never talked to Spectra. I don't know if they made this really personal, like practically, or if it was an accidental great creation. But the thing I do like about it is they have not changed it in years. And it is the same as it was 8 years ago, or, you know, or whenever. And that's not common. A lot of companies switch manufacturers or find cheaper parts or do these things. And I have not seen that with that pump. So it's kind of bulky, you know, and it, you know, the S1 has the battery and the S2 does not, but otherwise they're very similar. But it's just an all-around solid pump. It works for a lot of mothers. And it's interesting, you mentioned a couple of companies that have been around for a long time, and just their names are really well known, really well searched. The SEO marketing is crazy, you know, online. But I've kind of seen a decline in the quality and style of breast pumps from some of these big name companies that have been around for a while. I sometimes would prefer to use pumps that they made 10 or 20 years ago than some of the pumps that they're currently making, which is a little unfortunate. I think the idea behind them is good. A few of companies that I've talked with, like, they're trying, but they're just kind of missing the mark. And that's tricky.
I feel like Medela does an amazing job in the hospital. They make a really high quality pump. They've been very thoughtful about protecting colostrum and all of that. But I think that they've sort of fallen off the wagon with the personal use pumps.
Yeah, there's not many personal use Medela pumps that I'm recommending anymore. And it's weird because that used to be the name. And so I think a lot of moms are just going to Medela, and even a lot of lactation consultants are like, I've heard that name before, so it must be good. It's been around forever, but it's kind of not. I'm with you there.
Yeah. Okay. So Spectra as a whole is number one. I have more questions about Spectra, but we'll come back. What's below that?
Yeah. And I think just a quick note, it is important to differentiate between the pump you're talking about. So Spectra as a company, like, they also make some pumps that I don't love. Like the Spectra 9 is not one of my favorites. The Spectra Dual Compact, which you mentioned, the tinier gold one, is also not one of my favorites. It has really funky cycle speeds. So it's, I think off the top of my head, I think it's like 106 cycles per minute in stimulation mode and something like 26 in expression. So, and the pattern on it is a little funny. They were going for fast speed and it slows, like, I don't know. And the pattern is really funny. It kind of pulls quickly and then there's a break and then it pulls quickly again. So I think when you combine all of that, it gets kind of funny. But the Spectra Gold, so the bigger one, is actually a fantastic pump. I like it. I like it a lot. And I recommend it often. It has really great suction. I like that you can control each side separately. It's a very high quality pump. So it's really important to differentiate. Actually, somebody on the YouTube channel was asking me something about a Lancinot pump earlier. Actually, it was yesterday. And they were like, so I've heard that this Lancinot pump can kill your milk supply, but you're saying like you would maybe recommend it over this other one. Like, that doesn't make sense. And I said, you need to tell me which pump you're talking about, because the Lancinot Signature Pro is not a pump I recommend very often. The Lancinot Smart Pump, we can get that through DME companies, through insurance pretty often. And sometimes it's the best one on the list. If you're looking at like the bottom half of the list of breast pumps in the world, sometimes it's the top of that list. So it's really important to talk about the pump, the specific pump, because they're not all the same in the company.
Spectra.
Yeah. So I think anytime somebody asks me what's the best breast pump, my next question is always for what, because I think it really matters what the purpose is you're using it for. If you have a mother who's a physician and working in a busy ER, the Spectra 1 is probably not the best pump for her, because is she going to be able to sit down and pump on her shift? Probably not. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, if you're talking about simply quality, there's a list there, you know, but if you're talking about like for the mother, it really is individual. So for, you know, like tabletop pumps, the Spectra 1 is high on my list there. I like the Spectra Gold too, the bigger one. That's a nice one. The Unimom Opera is also a nice one. A lot of them perform really similarly. You know, I see two pumps that I see often that are like not some of my favorites are the Evenflow and the Lancet Signature Pro. Those are common on, you know, for insurance, but, and they're okay. Like, again, I never tell a mom like your breast pump is the worst. You need to go buy something new. Sometimes you have to just help them with what they've got. You know, and that's a thing too.
I guess I can ask you about some off the top of my head. I know here in Illinois, Medicaid typically gives the Amita MyaJoy. That one, you know, it's attractive because it's rechargeable and you can hook it to your belt and move around with it. We tend to think it's not great quality. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, the Amanita Myojoy is a little lackluster for me. And if you're talking about the realm of like portable pumps, so small motor portable pumps, I think some of my favorites there are the Genie Advanced from Pumpables. That's probably the one I recommend most often. It's very comparable to the Spectra too, so it pairs really nicely with that. The Baby Buddha just made some changes to their pump to put a more normal stimulation mode on there, which made me, I've been asking them to do that for a year because I'm like, I like your unique mode, but you need a normal one for all people. So that's actually a really high quality pump now that they've kind of made that adjustment. The Zomi 2 is also a good one that I see sometimes.
One of the questions that pops up in my mind, because when I was trained many years ago, the company that I did most of my lactation training through said, you really don't want to use battery operated pumps because if the battery isn't at full power, the pump may not be sucking as effectively and really could kill your milk supply. But that was 18 years ago. So I am assuming now that the technology is better. These rechargeable batteries are probably working at better capacity so that the pumps work better. What have you found and what do you recommend for these rechargeables?
Good question. When I did my initial testing on kind of my first round of breast pumps, I tested them on the ones that had batteries on plug-in and battery, and I found no significant difference. Again, these were pumps that have not been used a lot and like they had no hours on them.
And were the batteries full?
Yeah, for the most part. But it really, really matters the quality of the parts that the pump is made with. And that varies widely. And there's no way you can know. So I think, you know, so I was actually just talking with a pump company earlier this week, and they mentioned that they made an upgrade to their pump. And one of those upgrades was that they put a stronger battery, a higher quality battery in it, which was like, oh, I hadn't actually thought about that being a factor. So the quality of parts, you can get cheap parts. And that's why when you see these really inexpensive breast pumps on Amazon and like floating around from names you've never heard, they're probably made really cheaply. I mean, you just can't sell a $40 wearable pump that costs you $100 to make. You know what I'm saying?
So maybe that's one thing you can test in the future is pumps that have low battery. What is the suction like? What is the, you know, what is their performance like if they don't have a great quality battery, you know, if the battery's kind of worn out, how does that affect supply?
Yeah, I will say that overcharging your pump will kill the battery more quickly as well. So leaving it plugged in a lot or, you know, overnight or things, which is difficult because as a mother, practically, I would plug in my pump overnight if I had to use it the next day. So kind of just like finding that balance there.
Recommend, you know, once it's almost dead, is that's when you would charge it, not until then?
I think, I hate to say like a hard and fast rule there. I think whatever works for you. I wouldn't put too much thought and energy into that, especially for a mom who has way bigger things to worry about. Just charge it when you want to charge it. And hopefully you've got a good quality pump from a company that is reputable and they made it well. So I would just kind of I don't put too much effort into that part of it.
So since you mentioned it, I want to know your opinion on wearables because, you know, we generally, every mom asks about them and we don't have a lot of evidence about it. You know, the feedback from moms is pretty mixed. What have you found as far as, you know, the efficiency of them and also what sort of feedback have you seen from moms for comfort and all that?
Yeah, wearable pumps is probably one of the most popular top pumping topics, you know, maybe aside from flange-sizing at the moment. And I think, you know, we have a few other videos really going in depth on the YouTube channel. So I don't know if you have show notes or something, we can pop a few in there too. That would be awesome for your listeners. But I think wearable pumps came from a need, right? Mothers are busy and they wanted to be able to move around, to be able to multitask, to also fit in their pumping needs. Okay. So I understand the idea and the draw there, but that doesn't really lend well to a conducive environment for milk expression. If you think about trying to do that while you're breastfeeding a baby, it makes it more challenging. You know what I'm saying? So like you can throw a baby in a carrier and be like washing dishes and traveling around, but that session is going to be harder, you know? I think the same thing applies with a wearable breast pump. And there are some limitations just in the way that it's designed. You can't use a wearable breast pump without some level of compression. Just because of how it's designed, it has to sit in the bra. It has to be tight against the skin. So now you're kind of losing the effects of gravity and a free breast because you've compressed it with a device, right? So bra fit for wearables is really, really important, but you're always going to have some compression just because of how it's designed. They're also a little bit more difficult. You cannot see what you're doing. So if you want to use an effective flange size, you have a really small target to get the nipple aligned well. And hopefully it doesn't move during your pumping session, because if you're suctioning the side of the areola and not even the nipple, you're not going to get milk, right? So, and if you're using it kind of for its intent, meaning that you're moving around or multitasking, the odds that it stays in place, you know, there's just such a high user error with wearables, and just the way they're designed, they tend to be a little bit less efficient. And now I know you're going to have moms that, you know, are lactation professionals saying, hey, I had a mom who used a wearable pump exclusively and they were totally fine and their milk supply was beautiful. And then you're going to have moms that say, that was so much harder. I couldn't get enough like I did with my other pump. And this is where the variety of mothers just comes into play. For a mother who has a tendency towards a full or an oversupply, who just a light breeze in the wind triggers a letdown for her. Like, she just, anything that sucks on her nipple and breast is going to work, you know? But if you have a mom who is just making enough or has some risk factors for low supply or does have to be more intentional with the way she expresses milk, that's going to be harder. And it's unlikely that it's going to be as efficient as a more traditional pump. I'm not saying traditional pumps are the best thing. I hope that innovation keeps happening and that we come up with better things. But I'm not convinced yet that wearable pumps are the answer to the solution that we were kind of hoping.
What does their suction look like compared to the other pumps that you have tested?
It's very similar. They fall within similar ranges for suction, cycle speeds, patterns. You do have two motors on each side, so you don't lose suction when you're double pumping like you do with a lot of pumps, because you've got two, it's a dual motor pump in theory. But it looks very, very similar.
Have you gotten your hands on that new pump that has the device in the flange that massages or something? Well, I can't even think of what it's called right now.
It's the Annabella pump. Yeah, it's got the tongue motion in the flange. Yeah. It's interesting. You know, the suction on my grafts looks pretty similar to a lot of other pumps. But then you have this tongue motion that's coming in. We can put a video down in the show notes to kind of, we talked about this, but it's, I will say, I've had several moms. This is one of the pumps that I sent out to several moms to test it. I'm like, you just got to tell me what you think. And in our Facebook group, we have a lot of moms that test and report back, which is kind of fun. It's a lot going on. Okay. So you have the suction pulling the nipple outward, and then you also have this tongue movement on the bottom. So anyone who is sensitive to sensory overload, this will definitely trigger you in a bad way. So some moms were like, I kind of liked it. It does feel more similar to a baby than a traditional breast pump, but the outer around the tunnel is really thick. So it doesn't work well in all pumping bras. So you're going to have to hold that or do, you know, one at a time or so. Some of the logistics, they actually did a couple months ago come out with a double. So you've got the tubing that will go doubly, you know, but it's, hopefully they're in sync. I haven't tested it to see if they're in sync, because that would be crazy if they weren't.
What is the tongue made of? Is it soft and flexible, or is it a little rigid?
So the flange tunnel and shield is a soft silicone, but underneath that tongue thing is hard plastic. So it is rigid, but it is pressing against a soft silicone outer flange, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's a really interesting idea.
And mothers in the wild using it, just the ones that you got to test it.
I have in our Facebook group, there's been quite a few that have tried it on their own and used it. I haven't seen any significant milk increase from that kind of pump. And logistically, it does pose a little bit more challenges, which makes it hard. I would never, ever, ever recommend that for a brand new pumper or first time mom. Only experienced pumpers. Yeah.
If it has all these extra mechanisms built in, is it harder to clean and sterilize?
That's a good question. You don't you don't have to clean any of that like tongue part because it doesn't come in contact with milk. So it's still just the flange piece that you take off and clean. So it's not any harder than another pump, but setting it up is unique. And like I said, I would never, ever put that in the hands of a first-time mom. New technology in the breast pumping world is interesting. And we've seen a few interesting things come out over the years. Another one a few years ago was the Babyation pump. It was kind of like an all-in-one. So you pumped right, the milk went through the tubes down into the bottle. So you had to get new tubing every 24 hours or something like that. It also didn't have a traditional flange. It was like just a small little cup, kind of like a Silverette, you know, that size that you just stuck in the bra. And so it was kind of pulling the nipple in a unique way. It was designed for working moms who needed discreet pumping and kind of an all-in-one system. I think an engineer designed this. It was very unique. It didn't really pan out as well as we'd hoped just because of some of the logistics that came with that. But I love seeing new technology, this tongue motion. There's a wearable pump that just came out that has like a heating element in it. So it's providing heat to the breast while using the wearable pump. That one actually is pretty cool. And that one is one of my favorite. That's the Eufy pump.
I've seen the brand.
Yeah. So I love seeing new technology hit the market. I never recommend it for, like I said, first time moms or new pumpers, because we have to let more experienced mothers try this first and kind of tell us what they think. But it's fun.
So one of the things that I tend to teach when I'm teaching about pumping in my classes is, you know, because a baby at the breast provides suction and compression and the pump is suction only, we do have evidence that tells us the hands-on pumping tends to produce better outcomes. So do you recommend hands-on? Have you found it to be necessary with all pumps, or are there some pumps that are able to sort of compensate for that and provide good output without all the hands-on?
I don't think there's any pump that can mimic that part of an infant feeding at the breast, but I will say that some mothers find it more helpful than others. So again, some mothers just will make and release milk easily, and they might not have to do that. But I would say it's very common that you do need to add some human elements into this cold robot pump, you know? So touch, even from your own hand, and a little compression honestly goes a long way. And there's a lot of different pumping techniques that you can kind of have in your tool bag, because you have to kind of balance the technique and the barriers. So or like I said, a mother who's at work, she may not be able to do hands-on compression because she's in a workplace with other coworkers or a shared space. So then we have to kind of find the next best technique to help her get the output based on the barrier she has. For a mom that's at home, yeah, it can be really common that you need to use your hands. And I think even just saying that to them, this is a common thing. This doesn't mean something's wrong or that you're broken. This is a machine and not a baby. So sometimes we do have to add in extra elements there.
Yeah, I love that. So I want you to talk for a minute about the coaching program that you have for working mothers. I think it sounds really amazing and novel. And I have a course, it's called Private Practice Success. So I'm teaching new IBCLCs how to set up their private practice. And one of the things that I highlight in there is how to sort of niche down. And you have done that by niching down into becoming a pumping expert. So I love what you're providing here. I would love for you to tell my listeners about that program that you're offering, because it may spark an idea for them how they can provide some kind of unique benefit to the patients that they serve as well.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting transition for me. I decided to go this route because I knew I could not sustain one-on-one visits. And I have a business mind, so I could have run a private practice. I really could have done it, but I just couldn't bring myself to do that. We're also a military family, so we move a lot. And the thought for me of restarting a practice every time we move was unsustainable, you know, and, you know, financially, you know, seeing, you know, mothers, I don't want to talk down on it, 'cause I know this is like a lot of people do the private practice. And I think to do that, I do think you do have to niche down. I think you have to find the specific thing that you're good at and teach it that way. If we tried to do lactation consults, you know, a step, you know, going over latching and weighing babies and all this in a group setting, that would be really challenging, because that's kind of the broad overview. But if you have a thing, you know, if you are a tongue tie expert and you are working on latching babies, you know, pre or post revisions, and that's like your thing, you might be able to do that in a group setting. You know what I mean? Because everybody's doing the same thing. And that's kind of where I landed. Like I said, I hired a business coach who I really, really love. I'd be happy to connect anyone who is interested with her, because again, like, I'm a nurse and a lactation professional. I'm not a business expert. So I hired someone to help me with that, which is, I'm glad that you have students that have kind of turned to you to do the same thing. It is the fastest and most efficient way to get to your goal is to hire someone to help you and lay it out. So yeah, I decided to focus in on an area that meant a lot to me personally. When I went back to work, it was not fun and there was no one to help me. And so I wanted to really focus in on high level professionals, working moms. And our program is not cheap. It's a lifetime coaching program. So it really is geared towards those who probably can't afford that, which I think can hurt sometimes, especially for professionals who have, you know, we came in here to serve and to help. And, but you should get paid for your skills and expertise. You know, we also use YouTube as our main lead gen for our program, but it's also a really great way to share free information with a lot of people. I think we just hit 10 million views on our channel, and it's a really beautiful way to give free information to a lot of people. But if you want your hand held and you want the most efficient path and you want an expert in your back pocket, you can join our program. And if you're willing to invest in that, then I'm willing to invest my time and my expertise into you. And so I know that's a little bit of a lot of it non-traditional for IBCLCs, but for me, this is what I wanted to specialize in. And this is what worked well for me as a person and for my family and our lifestyle. So
tell me what the program looks like. How often are you meeting with these families? You said it's a group setting. So are they meeting you on Zoom? Like, explain it to me.
Yeah. So my clients are busy working moms, right? So we try and make it as asynchronous and efficient as possible. So we do have a really focused curriculum that they'll go through very step-by-step on just the information they need to know on how to do this, how to troubleshoot it and figure it out for themselves. So the people that join our program really are interested in learning about themselves. They're not looking for an expert just to like hand them all the answers, right? And then we have a group forum where they can contact me and my team of experts anytime with a question. We can answer on our own time, which works. We can get them answers quicker because no one has to coordinate schedules to do this, right? And then once a week, we do a group coaching call where all the moms can come on if they have a question or if they just want to listen. And that really helps build the community. You know, like we did our call today, the same day I'm recording with you. And there was a couple of twin moms that showed up, and one had a question about sleep and feeding and how that worked. And she was back to work. She was exhausted. She's like, I got to figure this out. And the other twin mom kind of like chimed in and was like, oh, we just went through this. Like, here's some things we did. And so they're really talking with their experts, but the community that they build, especially when you niche down and you are really intentional, we don't let people in that are not a fit for what we offer, you know? And I think that's really hard to turn people away. I think for someone new, they're like, why would you turn away anyone or any possible revenue? But if you want to help in a big way, you do kind of need to find your corner and your expertise and then just lean into it and not be afraid of that.
So what advice do you have? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but maybe let's reiterate it. For an IBCLC, a new IBCLC wants to start her career and really wants to niche down and provide some sort of unique service. What is your number one piece of advice there?
I think you just need to move your feet and be okay with wherever that takes you. I remember being new in a lot of different fields, in nursing, as a birth doula, in lactation, you know, online. And you just have to kind of move forward and then listen. Listen to what people want from you. And I know the market can seem really saturated. I can only imagine what it would be like for a brand new IBCLC walking onto Instagram being like, oh my gosh, there's so many. How am I going to stand out at all? You know, and Instagram's not my favorite. YouTube is way better. But you just have to start and then see what people want from you and lean into your own tendencies and your own personality. You know, I have a really practical mind, really balancing science and practical is my thing. I am not a diehard, you know, like everyone should be 100% breast milk, babies at the breast, you know, kind of thing, which for me, it makes sense to really lean into my natural tendencies and who I am as a person and what people want from me. If there's something that I get questions about a lot or that I'm passionate about, I can go down that road and be okay with kind of letting, I don't want to say the universe, but just letting things unfold naturally. You don't have to pick something as a brand new IBCLC. You need experience. So start doing the basics and then just see where it goes. See what you like doing. See what areas are most interesting to you and go from there.
Well, this was amazing. I think we could probably talk for like 3 more hours.
I know we barely even touched the surface.
I know we really didn't, but that's okay. The show notes for this episode are going to be a book because I want to make sure that everybody has links to find you. Everybody has links to your YouTube videos, but most importantly, I want to know how they can find about your training because everybody needs to go and do it today. So tell me how they find your training, how they sign up for that.
Yeah, you can find everything that we're doing on our website, which is newlittlelife.com. And I think I may even create a little coupon code for your listeners to if they want to do that training. It's worth 13 LSERPs too. So if you're looking for extra training, like it counts as lactation training. And I think being well-rounded in a lot of areas, specifically pumping, I can guarantee that a new IBCLC is going to get questions about pumping. Absolutely. Every mom has a breast pump. Which is really, yeah, it's frustrating because you just spent all this time learning about all the specifics of feeding at the breast and now you got to learn something new, but you don't have to know everything, right? You just have to start and do your best and learn things as it comes, but we are here to help train you in what you need to know in pumping. And the nice thing about a course like ours is that you have access to go back and relook it up. So you don't have to memorize everything. I think at this time it's lifetime access. So you can always go back and just look it up. Watch the lesson on it. We tend to put a lot of links and resources in because, again, I don't know everything. I know a lot, but, you know, and so we try and keep it updated and, you know, everyone's just doing the best they can. So
everybody after this podcast, go directly to the website, buy this course, start your training because we are going to be better able to serve our pumping moms. So thank you so much, Allison. This was amazing. I hope we can talk again in the future.
I would love to anytime. Thanks, Margaret.
Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe and check me out on social media at Margaret Salty.